Hello, I'm Elizabeth Jackson. As part of the ABC's summer season, we now present a Current Affairs special. And today we look at journalism in East Asia through the eyes of two of the longest-serving Australian reporters in the region. Barry Wayne and Michael Richardson have both been reporting on Asia for more than 35 years. Barry Wayne rose to the position of editor of the Asian Wall Street Journal, while Michael Richardson was Asia editor of the International Herald Tribune. Graeme DeBell caught up with both of them in Singapore.
The sound of journalism in Asia in decades past. The telex machines that carried the words of reporters around the world well into the 1980s. It was the background sound for two men who today rank amongst Australia's longest-serving journalists in Asia, Barry Wayne and Michael Richardson. They had a joint farewell from the Canberra Press Gallery in 1971 as they headed for Asia, where they've been reporting ever since. In Barry Wayne's case, embracing Asia meant quitting the Canberra Press Gallery and going off to look for work in Hong Kong and Singapore.
I got particularly interested in Asia in Canberra, working for in the press gallery, mixing with Asian diplomats, especially Southeast Asians, and particularly those from Malaysia and Singapore. So I got very interested in it. Then Vietnam was the big story. It was always in the news. And I got the opportunity to go to Vietnam for The Australian, and I went for a couple of months in 1971, and basically I went back to Australia and quit my job and came back to Asia, and I've been ever since.
Heading to Asia meant breaking with the normal tribal trek of Australian reporters to Fleet Street in London. And for Michael Richardson, there was also the issue of the weather.
I did, in a sense, join the throng and head for Britain. I went to university there. And during those long, dark winters in the early 60s, I was reading Joseph Conrad and Freya of the Seven Islands and other stories and novels that he set in tropical Southeast Asia. And all the sun and the warmth and the intrigue, it was rather appealing during those long, dark winter nights. But, yeah, beyond that, like Barry, I was fascinated by the Southeast Asians I'd met in Canberra, the diplomats talking about what was happening in the region that was so close to Australia, the Vietnam War, the Cambodian conflict. So I, like Barry, really wanted to grab any opportunity that arose to actually live and work in Asia.
Starting out in Southeast Asia in 1971 meant the two journalists followed the Vietnam generation, the correspondents who'd covered the war. And not having covered the Vietnam War meant they were better able to see the economic changes and the geopolitical shifts in Southeast Asia. Barry Wayne.
I spent only a couple of months there during the war. At the time I first came to Asia, I was mixing with journalists who'd spent a lot more time there, and I always wished I had done the same. But as time passed, the story after the communist takeover of the South, you know, became largely a reconstruction economic story. And I was pleased after a while that I had not done that, because most of those war correspondents had a mindset. Every time they visited the place after the country was reunited, they tended to see it in terms of battles and look backwards, whereas there were very interesting stories going on currently and looking forward, and that's how it's proved. Vietnam has emerged as a vibrant sort of market economy. Vietnam influenced the generation basically before me. A lot of those journalists who went there saw themselves sort of basically as war correspondents, you know, and they were there for the war. And then after that, I think everything looked pale and insignificant. And many of them, I think, were not terribly, this might be unfair to some of them, but many of them, I think, were not terribly interested in the region or necessarily in Vietnam outside the war.
I think something important happened after the fall of South Vietnam in 1975. The Americans lost the war, the Vietnamese communists won. In a sense then, of course, Vietnam dropped off the radar screen and was no longer the kind of foreign correspondent story. But something else important was happening during that those long years of the Indochina Wars. It had, they had in effect, and the American commitment, it's politically incorrect to say it, but it's a fact, in effect bought time for the rest of non-communist Southeast Asia to get their act together sufficiently to start a period of high economic growth. ASEAN was formed and started to take off. And so you had for the next 10 or 15 years, ASEAN coming together and Southeast Asia exhibiting high rates of economic growth to the point where even Vietnam and the formerly communist regimes in Cambodia and Laos were sufficiently attracted to join ASEAN. Meanwhile, the whole nature of the Southeast Asian story had changed away from conflict to economic growth, to trade. And so if you were a journalist and you weren't prepared to focus on the economic and commercial and business dimensions of the Southeast Asian growth story, you were left behind in the wake. And that is why I think journalists were forced to change from what you could call, what Barry has called a war correspondent mentality to one that was much more economically and commercially and trade oriented, which is why his newspaper, the Asian Wall Street Journal, did so well during that period.
Barry Wayne edited the Asian Wall Street Journal for 8 years, from 1984 to 1992, and then served as a contributing editor. He says government censorship in Asia has gradually become easier, but in the 1980s and 90s, an honest newspaper faced some nasty choices.
For a start, you're publishing in the English language. Now, that means different things it meant different things to different governments at that time. Some were alarmed by the fact that we're influential. Others thought that was inconsequential because you were not reaching too many people. Though we reckon we knew we were reaching the decision makers and the high income groups, that's for sure. I inherited a situation in which my predecessors were just absolutely determined to run the paper with the same honesty as they ran the Wall Street Journal in the States. I hope we also sort of tempered it with some sort of realism and respect. And by I don't mean doctoring stories or going soft on things, but I think going about stories in a sensitive way, doing the reporting honestly, but without being deliberately provocative and unnecessarily provocative and that sort of thing. In some cases. Just putting down the truth was provocative enough, and it got us into sort of trouble. The trouble varied at different times. At one stage during martial law in South Korea, they were going through, the censors were going through the paper, and they couldn't speak English. And, they would chop out anything based on words or anything they didn't quite understand, anything else. So they were sort of delivering it like confetti about 2 weeks later, but it didn't last that long. In Indonesia, individual copies of the paper, exposés on the Suharto fortune, very well documented pieces. They just banned those successive issues, but didn't take any further action against us. Malaysia at one stage banned the paper for 3 months and expelled both correspondents, and we took them to court. Bless their hearts, the Malaysians are not very well organized, and you can actually sort of, at that stage, you could actually take them to court and win a case against the expulsions, and then they concluded they might lose the other one, so they caved in and lifted the ban. Of course, Dr. Mahathir then fixed the record there by making the minister's decision not appealable in future to the court. So there was no, he closed those sort of loopholes. But you just have to have enough courage and enough belief that in the end that that the truth will, that it's worthwhile to run a newspaper honestly, and that you don't get anywhere. In fact, if you start watering down stories or doctoring stories or writing stories to please people. And I think you live and die by that reputation.
You're listening to two of Australia's longest-serving journalists in Asia, Barry Wayne, former editor of the Asian Wall Street Journal, and Michael Richardson, former Asia editor of the International Herald Tribune, both with more than 35 years in Asia, both still living and writing in Singapore. Michael Richardson first went there as the correspondent for the Melbourne Age, and that took him to the biggest story of his career, East Timor.
The story that I suppose is it's closest to my heart would be East Timor, because I went there first in 1974 and went back often thereafter and left the day before the Indonesians invaded on the very last plane out. And then after the Indonesian invasion, I was banned by Indonesia for 12 years from ever returning to Indonesia, although there were, fortunately, Indonesia being what it is and personal contacts being what they are, there were ways around that. But I followed the East Timor story. I managed to go back there during the Indonesian occupation, and then the independence story. And to me, that is an important and fascinating story, because not just because it's sort of David versus Goliath in a Southeast Asian context, but it showed that a resistance movement that used legitimate violence against an occupying force did not engage in terrorism, and also used a Gandhian type passive resistance and suffered awful consequences as a result, ultimately won out.
For Barry Wayne, the biggest story he's written came only a few years ago, an examination of the true ownership and operation of the economic engines of Macau, the casinos, based on a struggle for power between casino owner Stanley Ho and his estranged sister, Winnie Ho.
And I was given the time. I spent nearly 9 to 12 months writing, researching one story in what turned out to be a series of stories. But among other things, I discovered myself nothing, not based on her allegation, I discovered that his casinos were engaged in serious money smuggling out of China. In some cases, it would have been laundering money because it would have been the proceeds of crime. I was able to befriend Chinese intelligence sources who took me to China, and I put money in underground illegally and took it out of the casino with a check signed by executives that there was winnings for the casino, showing, you know, conclusive proof. This was only one small element of the story, but it was just simply a marvelous story. And at that stage, the Asian Wall Street Journal and the Far East Economic Review were put together, and it was judged a better story for the review. And it ran as a cover story and ran across about 8 pages. And they tell me that in Hong Kong, it sold out on the first afternoon the review came out. But it was just simply a marvelous story, and because I was given the time to do it, so I was in Singapore going backwards and forwards to Hong Kong and to Macau carefully. Two of the lawyers representing Winnie Ho were threatened, and the first lawyer was bashed twice, and more recently the lawyer legislator representing Winnie Ho was bashed up seriously in the middle of the day in Hong Kong. And so these people play pretty tough, whoever they are, without making accusations. And it just simply was a very, very fascinating story, and the clash of generations, illegitimate children, big money, Americans coming in, the disputes, Chinese authorities, and negotiations to try and settle this matter. The Chinese authorities came into it. And I was able to develop... I learned a lot about how triads operate in Macau, which I'd never known, even though I'd lived in Hong Kong for many years. And it was a fascinating story.
Michael Richardson says Asia has moved beyond war and conflict, beyond the early stages of economic growth, and a big new question confronts the hope that the 21st century will belong to Asia.
We had the Asian financial crisis in 1997-98, and that, temporarily at least, brought the growth story to a crashing halt. Now, I think we're in a very different era. Superficially, the growth, the region has recovered, the growth is rampant again, the investors are back, both capital investment and stock market or portfolio investment. China's the big hot story. And yet, I think that the real story now is that we're in the era of climate change and environmental degradation, and this is going to hit Asia really hard in ways that the politicians simply don't want to face up to, that the guts are going to be kicked out of economic growth. You simply will no longer be able to stick to the same formula of high growth to create jobs, to maintain social and political stability. And this is going to be a huge challenge, not just for the Asian region, but for Australia as well. And the political leaders are only just starting to think seriously about this and how to get to grips with it. And this is the big story for the future. It's moved beyond war and conflict. It's moved beyond economic growth. We're now thinking, we now have to think very seriously about new ways of sustainable economic development, which will force every country to rethink how it cares for its people.
Barry Wayne says he's had more than 35 years writing about one of the biggest stories in the world, the creation of the modern Asia after 500 years of European domination.
Just fantastic. I think all the main issues in life that are already settled in the countries we came from, in Australia or Britain, the form of government, how everything works, and that all these issues were still in transition, and some of them are still not settled in these countries, and some of the borders and boundaries are still not settled on which will be countries and separate nations and all that sort of thing. So to watch all that fall into place, gradually come together, and that has just been an amazing story, and I get as excited today as when I arrived.
For Michael Richardson, journalism in Asia has been a movable feast.
To be an observer in a part of the world that for most of this time has been progressing, has been in many countries improving living standards. I draw the contrast between Southeast Asia for much of this period and South Asia for much of the period. And I covered both. I always had the feeling that going to South Asia, you were visiting countries that were tending to slip backwards. Whereas here in Southeast Asia, yes, there was still a lot of poverty and a lot of injustice and so on. But you were in a region that was tending to move forward. And I personally have always found that exciting and very interesting. And that's why I say a movable feast.
Australian journalists Barry Wayne and Michael Richardson speaking in Singapore to Graham DeBell. And you've been listening to A Current Affairs Special.